Okay, it's 6:02 here on Thursday evening, December 10th, 2020. We're going to call the Administrative Control Board meeting for the Mountain Regional Water Special Service District to order. We have a public hearing portion of the meeting tonight for do we have any public input other than for the public hearing? Doesn't sound like it. So we'll let the minutes reflect that. So then item two is the public hearing. Scott, do we need a motion to move into the public hearing?
No. So just procedurally, Mike, what I'd like to do is I'd like to just provide a brief overview of the memo that I put together, reflecting the changes from our work session during our last board meeting. We'll then open it up for any board discussion or questions. Following that, Mike, you can open the public hearing. We'll take any public comment. You'll then close the public hearing, and then you'll make a motion or consider a motion for approval. So if you're okay with that, then I'll just start with the memo that's in the packet. And Chris, if you wouldn't mind bringing that up, if it's handy. If not, I can grab it on my side.
Give me just 1 second, Scott.
Okay.
You said the memo, correct?
Yeah, that's perfect. I got a text from Ian that says I'm logged in, but it says meeting not started yet.
Nope, he's there. He just came in a second ago.
Okay, great. Just a quick overview of the memo. These were the changes that were recommended during our work session last month to update the map graphics to include acre foot statistics where relevant. To simplify the supply and demand charts. So all those things were completed in the final revision of the plan. I also moved to identify specific water conservation goals in two areas. One, with respect to our water loss reduction for the district, currently at 14% annually. I've identified a goal to get that down to 10% over the next 5 years. Similarly, we're looking to increase our eye on water participation. That is the customer portal for the new meters. And specific to this is the leak alert. We'd really like to see two-thirds of our metered, two-thirds of our customers with these meters to have leak alerts identified, which is going to decrease the amount of water lost on their side, ultimately decreasing the unnecessary use of water for the district and unnecessary costs for our customers. Those two targets, I believe, will set us on the path to meet the goal of a 10% reduction in overall system demands by 2050, which is reflected in the charts in the plan. As compared to the business as usual approach. As a reminder, by accomplishing this goal, this would delay a second phase of water treatment expansion capacity at our water treatment plant in Promontory, so thus making more efficient use of our water resources. So that identifies the specific changes that were made. Turning it over now to the board for any comments or further discussion on that?
Thanks, Scott. Does anybody have any comments to this?
I love it. I love it. Both the initiatives, that's kind of swinging for the fences, but I think you can do it.
Thanks, Karen. So if there's no further discussion, Mike, you can go ahead and open the public hearing.
Okay, I think so. We're now open for the public hearing portion of our meeting tonight. Do we have any public comments?
Chris, you don't see any hands raised, correct?
No, I do not.
Okay, then we'll close the public hearing portion of the meeting and would be open to a motion to approve this water conservation plan.
I've moved that the district's 2020 water conservation plan be approved by the board.
I'll second that.
Tim and Ian. All those in favor, say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Okay, that was unanimous. I saw the form in here, Scott.
Yep, so that's, we're going to need your signature on that, Mike, and I believe my signature as well. So what we can do is all forms that need to be signed by you, we can have our team get that stuff together and send it off to you tomorrow.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you.
And then just so you know, what we'll do is we'll submit all required paperwork to the state by the end of the year, which includes the minutes, the public hearing notice, and any other pieces that the state requires.
Sounds good. Well, thanks to the staff for all the hard work on that and bringing it together. I agree with Karen. I think it's really well done. So item 3 on the agenda tonight is executive session. I know we have to go into that. Do we have a motion?
Before we have a motion, Scott, has there been any issues that have come up since we've spoken last that would require your attendance in the executive session?
There has not, Tim. Nothing else has popped up.
Okay. Before we go into the executive session, I send out an email to each of the board members. Karen, I don't know whether you're going to have to log out of this session and then call in and then log back in, but I sent out a call-in number with a code, so I just remind the board members to mute your microphone and mute your or stop the video and then call in to the number that I provided to you, and we'll conduct the business that way.
Yep.
So I have moved that we move into executive session.
Okay. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Tim and Ian, all those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Okay, that was unanimous.
So, Chris, if you could please excuse the board members as we have in the past.
Session from the executive session.
I'll second that.
So it was a motion by Tim, second by Ian to come back into open.
Yep. All those in favor? Aye.
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 Session and ready for item 4, the consent agenda. We've got the minutes from the November 12th meeting, the check register. Do we have any POs?
No POs for consideration tonight, Mike.
Okay. So for the minutes, do we have any comments?
I had a question on, so it was mentioned later in the agenda as well. What's the DocuWare cloud with Les Olson?
So that is a electronic document management system that we're moving towards. It allows us to integrate with our accounts payable, all of our customer service records. Everything will be in one large database that's all context searchable. So it's going to make some like the legal side of stuff, all the agreements and all that kind of stuff a lot easier for us to be able to deal with and see and have unified copies of the same stuff.
That sounds incredible.
It actually, yeah, it's pretty amazing. This was something Doug kind of started us down the road of, and he kind of picked an option, and we were trying to come up with. He had some workable solutions, but the DocuWare at the time when he looked at it was very cost prohibitive. And when they started doing their own cloud hosted version, it became a lot more affordable. Anna and I looked at it over a year ago. And then the whole COVID thing kind of slowed everything down. We had them do a demo for all the admin staff, and everybody seemed on board with it. So we've moved forward.
Great.
Mark, I have some questions on the check register. One of the checks in there was to Wheeler, and it said a one-year rental. Are we renting equipment for a year at a time?
Yes, it's a one-year lease on a, I believe that one's for a track hoe. Or is that the skid
excavator compactor, I think is what it was.
Brian, do you want to speak to exactly the piece of equipment that was? It was the $7,500 we just recently paid.
Yeah, we lease the Mini, and then we also lease the, you know, the compactor, and there's another component that we also lease. That's on a yearly basis. Just an attachment to the Mini is what we lease.
And that costs just $7,500 a year?
Whatever. But I believe that's for the Mini itself.
Okay. There was a... On page 2, that repairs to a truck on there for $7,600. Was there an accident or something that required the repairs to the truck?
That was related to the Dixon accident before we paid that, and then were reimbursed minus our $500 deductible from the insurance company.
Okay. On the Aqua Engineering, the first entry that there was in there on page 3, a number of the entries next to the dollar amount have a capital V next to it. And I didn't understand what the V meant.
Oh, that was, that's page 3. That was void. There was some clearing of invoices that had been entered that needed to be corrected. So that's just voiding that invoice.
Void? Okay.
Yeah.
And I had a question about the DocuCloud. I think that was answered in the technology report. There's a Summit Electrical for community water, and it's an electrical thing for like $20,000. Is that like a competitive bid, or is that a on-call contract that you have with Summit Electric?
It's not an on-call contract. We received quotes or went out and got pricing for the community water. Since it's under $50,000 for construction, and we don't have to have competitive bids, but Chris worked with them, and I think we believe that was a good price for all the electrical work they had to do. Chris was up at the community water treatment plant and tying it to the Gulch well and things like that, correct?
Yeah, it was related to all the cabling and everything you guys saw back in, I believe it was October's packet.
Okay, well, that's all my questions. Thanks.
You bet. Any other questions on the check register?
Ready for a motion. Tim got the one that I had on the Dixon accident. That was the one at the Utah Olympic Park?
Correct.
Yep. Okay. Yeah, nothing for me.
Okay. We're ready for a motion to approve the consent agenda.
Motion to approve the consent agenda.
That's Ian. And a second.
Second.
Oh. Should be with Karen. Okay. All those in favor, aye.
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 Aye. That was unanimous. Item 5, financial management. Mr. Steve Anderson.
So the first item there, update regarding the billing adjustment for the Olympic Park. We have made that adjustment and were able to absorb that into November without materially changing the results. We had some expense savings in November and good revenue. Included in the packet was a memo I put together about some of the changes that have been made as the billing process has been moved up to the finance department. So as finance and customer service now work together on that, some additional internal controls, reports we go through, just to prevent any new errors being introduced into the billing system. And then the second part of that memo was the rate setting and the process we go through to set rates. If a rate changes for a customer, double approval and triple approval if it's for not our standard residential type customer.
So, how is it going to show on the ledger for the Utah Olympic Park? Are they going to invoice us for what their normal usage is, and then we're going to apply a deduction to that invoiced amount on a, say, a three-month basis or first month or what?
What we've done is we put a credit on their account for the full amount. And then, for example, their November bill, we've taken against that to decrease the credit. We'll take the December bill, probably January. Their year end is different, so they're going to kind of use it up just through paying their bill for the additional usage they're having right now. And then we will, if the whatever balance is left over, we'll cut a check probably February, March.
Will there be an audit trail on there? So, for example, when you see a credit on the bill for the Utah Olympic Park, will there be some annotation on that credit to explain what it is?
Yes, and I've actually been emailing with their CFO and exchanging an email at the end of every month that this is the new updated balance. And then so we kind of keep that track, both of us, and are aware of what's going on. And right now they're projecting they'll use about 100,000 of the credit in actual usage, and the check will probably be around 60,000.
And additional paper trail on that, I'm going to work with Dave Thomas to put together a letter agreement, as he specified during our last meeting. That'll identify all the details of the overcharge condition, and I've communicated that with Colin Hilton, leadership over at the UOP, and he's expecting that.
Okay. All right, Steve.
Right. The second item was the updated rate schedule. Chris, if you have that and want to bring up the red line and the clean version, or I can share it. It's on my screen, too, if you want me to just share
it. You can just share it, because you can scroll where you want to be.
Okay.
And also, just so everyone's aware, there's another attendee by the name of Brian as well. Brian, we're past the public input part, but if you have something you'd like to say, just please raise your hand and we'll allow you to speak.
Brian?
So this was the old version put in table format, so it's easier to read, and then just makes it a little easier to also edit. So the red lines are the things we've needed to change. As you can see, it was some clarification on where it should state ERC instead of connection. We could eliminate some old history that we've been carrying forward on some of that, and just eliminating a lateral fee that really isn't applicable in the Summit Park. So they were minor changes. We ran through Dave Thomas, and he said, yeah, there's no need to hold a rate hearing. You're not actually changing any rates. You're just doing some clarification and cleanup work on that. So that was the red line, and this is the new rate sheet with those changes. And this is how we'll present it from here on out. Always, It's just a little easier to read than how we had it before. So no rate changes, just some clarifying items and made sure it was stated correctly and things like that. So if we're just asking for your approval on being able to publish this new rate schedule, and this will be the new rate schedule on our bill, on the back of our bill starting in January.
Has it been checked?
Yeah, Scott, we actually met a couple of times and then everyone reviewed. Scott, Lisa, Anna, and I have all reviewed and gone through it.
Okay.
Can I ask a quick question? So,
you bet.
So you just changed the Commonwealth irrigation to the same bands that everything else was. Is that why you made that change?
Yeah, it's just a function of somewhere where maybe 20 units share the outside irrigation. And so we just put that into the same tiers, and they use their because they're all paying a base on their individual account anyway. So it was just unnecessary to have a second tiering for them. Any other questions? Okay. Do we need a motion on that, Scott, to approve that, or is that?
Yes, we do, Steve.
Okay.
So I move to approve the new rate schedule.
Before we go on that, there's nothing on here that indicates a date, unless it's down at the bottom. So this document standing alone, it's not referenced in time.
Oh, thank you, Tim. That's an excellent catch. We will add a date, effective date of January 1, and before we publish it then. Thank you.
Okay. Any other comments?
Yeah, just a quick follow-up as I thought about Steve's comment there. Steve, I recommend we establish an effective date of tonight. There's no changes to the rates in this schedule. These are annotation changes, so I recommend
we'll make it effective tonight.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Is there an expiration date on these rates?
Nope. It would be updated at the time that the board approved an adjustment to these rates in the future or any other changes.
Okay. Okay. So I think we're ready for that motion.
I move to approve the rate schedule.
It was Karen and a second.
Second that.
Oh, it was Tim. All those in favor? Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Okay, that was unanimous. 5C, consideration of approval of the insurance provider.
I wanted to give you an update on that. So what has happened is we have received two very competitive bids this week. We are still in the process of analyzing and making sure we're comparing apples to apples on that. The good news is that we will have a decrease in what we will be paying for insurance next year of looks like at least 10 to probably 15%. So as we complete that process, we didn't want to jump to a conclusion. We want to make sure we're looking at them both in depth and getting all the input and feedback we need from Scott and Lisa and myself. What we'd like to ask is if we could get your approval to proceed with either Olympus Insurance Agency. They've quoted using Philadelphia and Workers' Compensation Fund or Utah Local Governments Trust. That's who is our current carrier, and they've also sharpened their pencil and come down on several of the rates for us. So we just didn't want to jump to a decision tonight, but if we could get your consideration for letting us proceed and then informing you as we select one of those two providers, that's what we're hoping for tonight.
Steve, have you seen any substantive change in the terms of the policy with regards to pandemics or force majeure or anything like that? Or is it pretty much the same language?
Nothing new that we've seen along those lines or that has been brought to my attention, but I will put that in on a note to just make sure we double check on that as we complete our evaluation.
I think it's incredible. We're seeing a decrease in our insurance costs. So great work.
Yeah, it seems like the Utah local government trust we had switched to them a few years ago, and we had some savings there.
Yeah, we've had some savings. They have held our rate flat. You know, the only changes have really been as we've added assets and vehicles or additional buildings, equipment, things like that. They've been a good partner, but Olympus is definitely trying to get our business. So we're going to give both of them a fair shot and take all factors into consideration. So that'll be a effort with Scott and Lisa and myself. We're going to team up and just make sure we all feel good about that decision.
And just to be clear,
savings that we weren't planning on, let's say, in the budget. So
yeah, and just to be clear, Steve, right? We've gotten bids from both agencies. Both bids are lower than our 2020 premium costs. We're just doing a final review and compare, understanding those differences, and we're hoping as staff to be able to make that final selection with board's approval tonight.
Well, can the board give approval on, provided that, if all things being equal, I'd say stick with the one you got, but can we give approval that if you're within, say, 2%, then you can make a judgment call?
Yeah, you can do that, Tim. The board can handle this a number of different ways. They could say, provide the staff the authority to make the final decision between these two carriers. If you want to establish a criteria at which we would move from the existing carrier to the next carrier, that would be fine as well.
Well, Steve, what are you seeing right now for the prices?
The difference, and this is why we have to do a little more digging, the proposal or quote from Utah Local Governments Trust includes a portion called no fault, where even if we are not necessarily held liable, it'll pay to fix somebody's landscaping, a line broke and we washed it away. So $2,000 or $3,000 at a shot. The other quote does not have that, but is less money. So they're not within 2 or 3% because there's an element that with the one quote, they're participating, the people who insure through them, and they're well known in the industry, and Huron Valley Conservancy District uses them and several other water utilities, but they send up their own internal no fault fund to pay for those. So we're just, one of our last evaluations or one of the real big pieces is to evaluate what that no-fault insurance is worth to us. Is it worth paying a higher premium to Utah Local Governments Trust to have that in place, or should we go with Olympic and do that internally?
And do you know what the percentage difference in the quotes are at this point, Steve?
About 10%. It's a nice little piece to have as part of our policy, and that's why, we're probably, maybe it's a little bit, we're about $12,000 difference between the two quotes at this point in time. But if we use that no fault two or three times during a year, then that pays that difference. But that's where I've been doing some look into our history on how often we use that. And could we do it cheaper if we were doing it in-house instead of just reimbursing somebody who calls whoever? If you do it no-fault internally, you usually contract directly with ServPro under a state contract pricing. So, but those are all the moving parts that I'm in the evaluation process of right now.
And even the 10% higher one is lower than we're currently at.
Yes, yeah, that is from the Utah local, so, and they
weren't offering the no fault in the past. I take it.
Yeah, they've always had it as part of their policy.
Oh, and have you ever exercised it?
Oh, yes. We just, and that's why I'm looking at how much those incidents they had to pay out on, how their frequency. There were at least a couple this year, one last year, and what those ended up costing them, because at least a portion of that cost would now come internal if we went to the other agency, to Olympus Insurance.
Well, I'd have no problem with going with broad authority at this point. I think the major homework's been done on this. It looks like one's higher, but for a reason.
Yeah, exactly. We're just evaluating that reason and the value of that reason.
Okay. So should we...
Discussion?
Yeah, another discussion.
Okay. So do we have a motion to let the staff pick either Olympus or the Utah Local Government's Trust as they complete their evaluation?
Yeah, I would move to give the district discretion to negotiate a settlement on the two carriers that we have right now, or the two providers.
Okay, that was Tim. Is there a second?
Second.
Karen, all those in favor, aye.
Aye.
Did I catch Ian?
Yeah, I stepped on Tim, sorry. Yep, aye.
Okay, that was unanimous.
Thank you very much. That's my part for tonight.
Thanks, Steve. Is there were you going to touch on any financial, just general updates from items from the packet, or do you want to just take any questions if the board's had a chance to review that?
Yeah, what was included in your packet were the October results, which you'd gotten some preliminary feedback or some input in last month. The November results are not mature. They're what we expected. And as I mentioned before, that credit adjustment to Olympic Park has been absorbed, and we're still looking just fine for year end. No material changes. So, but you'll get a complete November close in your next packet, and then we'll be working on the year end and get you that out as soon as we can.
All right. Thanks for that, Steve.
You bet.
Item 6, General Manager Comments.
All right, thanks, Mike. I'm going to go ahead and share my screen. Chris, this is going to stop your screen share, just so you know. So agenda item 6A is the presentation of the draft water sales contract with Weber Basin Water Conservancy District for our regional water supply and settlement agreement water for years 2021 through 2025. So there's no action by the board required on this. You should see on your screen the memorandum of agreement. This is our standard form that we enter into with Weber Basin on an annual basis. The new information updated for the 2021 year is going to be the contract amount per acre foot in our Tier 2 and Tier 3 water. Those contract amounts reflect the results of the rate study that we conducted with Lewis, Young, Robertson, and Birmingham earlier this year. Another addition is we are bringing in, you know, each year as we establish these contracts, these agreements, we're bringing in that fifth year delivery. So the 2025 water delivery is brought in as the fifth year. We plan to deliver 400 acre feet of our settlement agreement water. 2025 is the last year for delivering that water. And then we'll do 100 acre feet of our regional water supply, again, at those rates that were established in the rate study. The delivery of this combined 500 acre feet falls within the projections and the safety factors that we've discussed with the board in the past, and I'm comfortable with these numbers. Also in the agreement is the revenue that we expect to generate both annually and quarterly. All other terms, I guess lastly, also the delivery schedule. What this is the instantaneous flows that we will be delivering to Weber Basin by month. And all other pieces of this agreement, again, are part of our standard form. So I just wanted to present that to the board. If there's any questions, I'm happy to take them. Otherwise, again, no action by the board on this. This is an agreement that I execute with Weber Basin.
Can I ask a question? On page 4, it's section 4, it had a thing about penalties for if they exceed peak delivery, affecting the full year water. And I guess I didn't understand how peak delivery and the full year were connected.
So, it's a good question, Karen. Let me get my bearings here for a second. Basically what it is that there's two pieces here. One is if they haven't taken all their water, if Weber Basin hasn't taken the defined, defined water by month here, they can take it in the month that they did not plan to take it at a lower flow rate, so at a peaking factor of 1, which I don't have those numbers directly in front of me, but it's at a flow rate that's more tolerable for the district. The second piece of this is if they go over their allocation, that we have a rate defined for that overage, and that rate is per our wholesale rate 130 in our rate schedule. So I think those are the pieces that you're talking about.
So it was super complicated, just like it looks.
It is a bit. So I don't know if I answered your question on that or if I can elaborate.
No, that was helpful. I couldn't understand how one would affect the other, but that makes sense. So they can't come in July and then open the gate up as much as they want.
No. So these flow rates that are identified here in this chart on the page I'm showing, they have to stick to these flow rates.
Gotcha.
And who's the signatory to this agreement?
It is myself and then the chair of the board of trustees for Weber Basin and their attorney.
Okay.
This is a culmination of a huge amount of work. So, compliments to the whole team, Scott. Well done.
Thanks, Ian. Any further comments on that? If not, we can move on to agenda item 6B. All righty. And Mike, you still with us? Yeah, there we go. We lost you there for a minute.
Okay. Tim, so is this? I don't have it in the packet.
So 6B is just an agenda item, Mike. It's just the consideration of approval of a merit increase for me, the general manager.
Right. Tim, do you want to take us through that?
We deliberated in executive session, and we have agreed to a percent increase. In this meeting, you want that to be divulged?
Yes, please.
Okay, we're looking at a 4% merit increase.
Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate the board's consideration. And also, I want to thank Tim and Ian for just their engagement and leadership as the personnel committee this year. There's been a few topics that you've been extremely helpful with.
Okay, so do we have a motion for that approval?
Do we need one?
Yes.
Well, I move that we approve a rate of salary increase of 4% for the general manager.
I second that.
Makes sense. Tim and Ian. All those in favor? Aye.
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 Okay, that was unanimous. All right, Scott, do you have anything else for us there? Six?
Two items. One is I just want to thank Brian and the operations staff. I'm not sure if you saw in Brian's report, but he identified the preventative maintenance accomplishments for the year, specific to fire hydrants, valves, and also PRVs in the district. Brian and his team are staying ahead of his preventative maintenance goals on these assets, and they did a ton of work this year. So I want to extend a thanks to them. And then secondly, just a reminder, we do have a board position which is opening up, and I'm wondering if that may be some of the attendees we're seeing tonight. I'm thankful that they've joined us. Welcome. Bob Neumeister's position will at the end of this year, his term is up. What's that?
Expired.
Thank you. That's the word I'm looking for. And so anyway, if any board members know of any folks that may be interested, just a reminder, please, reach out to them and recommend that they apply. Ian, I believe you just submitted your, renewal application. So that application is live. I understand interviews are going to be conducted, by the county. I believe the council performs those interviews, and that'll be done in January. So again, just a reminder to the board to, reach out to folks in your professional circles on that. And that's all I have.
The last meeting we were talking about, geographic placement, ideal geographic placement. I noticed that we were looking at one from the colonies, which I guess that's a good geographic placement. I thought we were looking out towards the Silver Creek area.
So I think the ideal candidate would have a background in either finance or accounting or economics or something similar on the business side. And then secondly, a candidate who lives in some of the neighborhoods that we serve that have the larger homes in the district, neighborhoods like the Colony, Glenwild Preserve, Red Hawk, those neighborhoods, so that we have representation from a large residential customer. Another option would be representation from a commercial customer. That's a topic I've talked about with a couple board members. I think that would be really advantageous for the district as well. So that's all I had, Mike.
That then is the 2020 fraud risk assessment. Ms. Lisa Hoffman has a presentation here.
Yep. Let me share my screen with you. Okay, so included in your packet was a memo describing the fraud risk assessment we completed during the year, and this risk assessment was the product of an auditor alert issued by the Utah Office of the State Auditor in February of 2020. And this new alert basically adopted this fraud questionnaire that is to be completed by every local government. And it really just gives board members a better understanding of best practices for internal controls and fraud detection and prevention in the entity. This alert really identifies best practices. They're nothing that's, you know, required. They're just highly recommended. This assessment also is not to take the place of the internal audit, internal control review that's done by our independent auditor, external auditors, every year with our annual audit. This is just in addition to the two certifiers of this will be the chief administrative officer, which is Scott Morrison, and the chief financial officer, Steve Anderson. This isn't, the board does not need to take any action on this. The only thing that the alert requires is that we just present this before the end of the year to the board and go through any, you know, changes that we might want to make in our own internal policies and kind of see where we land on this fraud risk assessment questionnaire as far as our point total. And then we can, you know, maybe try to implement some of those things we'd like to. And then this questionnaire would be provided to the state auditor by June 30 of 2021. So just briefly, the risk assessment really was a two-page assessment to go over some of the internal controls that we currently have in place at the district. Of the 395 points available, the district earned 330 points, which falls in the low risk category level. We did identify some items after going through this, or some things that we think we could do fairly easily in the next few months that could get us into the highest level, which would be the very low risk level. And I'll talk about a few of those that I included in the memo. And about half of the points were allocated to basic separation of duties, of which the, I'll bring them up here really quick. Basic separation of duty, the district is adequate on, you know, as far as meeting all these criteria. I think of the 12 questions, we have separation of duties in every area. The one item that we had to say no to, but we do have mitigating controls, I feel, that are in place. And that would be question number 4 here, which asks, are all people who have access to blank checks different from those who are authorized signers? And Steve Anderson does also have access in addition to the new accountant that we just recently brought on. They both have access to the blank checks. The mitigating control here is we need 2 signatures on all checks. There is no dollar amount threshold. Every check has to have 2 signatures, and that usually comes from the CFO, and it comes from Scott Morrison, the general manager. And also, as we talked about earlier, the board reviews every check register monthly, so the board has their eyes on every check that goes out of Mountain Regional Water. So I feel like those 2 mitigating controls allow this to be a no. We really need a backup and one other person who needs to have access to blank check stock besides just Sharon.
You know, Lisa, we have access to taking a look at the check register, but I'm not looking at it for the purposes of trying to detect fraud. If we're saying that that's a check, maybe the others are, because I think that fraud can come in, if we're using fraud, the definition being someone using deceptive means for financial gain, sometimes that comes in little chunks. And I don't necessarily look at the little chunks like some of those credit card things. There's just line after line after line after line of credit card numbers in there, and we went over that once about what is your process for checking that to make sure that there's a second set of eyes. But I just wanted to raise the issue that if we're saying that the board has an opportunity to take a look at the check register, I'm not taking a look at the check register for the opportunity to detect fraud. Maybe others are.
I don't think it's the sole, you know, mitigating control. I think another one of the things that we have in place is obviously 2 signers. So that it isn't just the finance department that's in charge of issuing a check. It also has to be reviewed by the general manager and signed off on. I think if you saw something come up over and over again, and I feel like, 5 people on the board are getting their eyes on every single check every single month, that I think there would be some kind of red flag waved. And I feel like you do a good job looking at not only dollar amount, but, you know, maybe who the vendors are. And that would be the risk here. If, you know, if, if Steve Anderson has a buddy and, you know, he pulls a blank check and, you know, tries to, you know, write that for a dollar amount, he's going to have to, A, get someone else's signature on it besides himself. And then, which is going to be very difficult, I think, to do. And then
my point is we better have a reliance on the board for the purposes of fraud detection, because that's what this is all about here, is that we need a finer mesh net out there than my review of the checks. I can't speak for the rest of the board members, but I'm looking for big numbers and things that don't make sense in the title, right?
Yeah. Is Dave or Blaine on the line tonight?
They are not on the line tonight, Mike. Blaine's no longer with the county. Dave had another obligation.
Yeah, I'd be interested to hear how, if looking for fraud is part of the board's responsibility in reviewing the check register.
We can circle back with Dave. That's not a problem.
It is in our policies that the board reviews every check register as a check and as a control in one of our administrative policies.
So, Lisa, I was only raising that because if we have anything in this in this checklist that's indicating that that's a positive or an affirmative fraud prevention, I don't believe that we can go quite that far at this point. If it's a belt and suspender, if it's another thing that is on top of other fraud prevention measures that are being taken, I think that that's wonderful, but I don't know that that's a first line of defense.
And it's not. I mean, it's not like Sharon's just cutting checks and then there are a lot of processes and procedures that we go through every time a check is cut. Every invoice has to be approved by a that manager then has to submit that check to Sharon, our accountant, who then reviews. She signs off on a voucher for every check. Steve Anderson signs off on a voucher for every check. And after that happens, then Steve has to sign the check, and then that check is then signed by another individual, which is Scott Morrison. If he isn't available, then I sign off on a check.
I'm in agreement with the process that you have. I think it's a good process. I think it's the best that you can do. I'm just questioning whether you're representing the board's review of the check register as being something that is an affirmative check for fraud.
Okay. We can talk to Dave about it.
Okay.
I do feel like it is, you know, one more level, one more set of eyes, one more set of review. But if you feel like it's not, we can certainly talk to Dave Thomas about that.
It's not a primary review for fraud, I can tell you that. Not when I'm doing it.
No, I'm not. I don't think the intent was that. I think it's just another level. It's another layer that's in place in order to help mitigate risk.
It get us a couple of points.
There's just not a lot of information to really deduce fraud.
Yeah. And I think that's why that the other process steps that Lisa identified are in place, right? It's not, the board's not signing checks per se. Tim, I think I understand your point that, if we're solely relying on the board to, identify fraud through the check register, that, we need a closer look, but I don't think that's the case. I don't think we're solely relying on the board, as Lisa's identified, but we can, certainly follow up with Dave on that.
My point is I just don't think we should represent it as more than it really is.
That makes sense.
Okay.
I'm going to weigh in that I'm more in line with Lisa's opinion on this. I feel like, yeah, my primary objective is not looking for fraud, but with the amount of people that are looking at items on there and what's being discussed and brought up on a monthly basis and then discussing that amongst all parties, it would be virtually impossible to sneak something through that level of review. So I'm very comfortable with it being a portion of the fraud defense for the district.
As kind of the final step in the whole process.
Yeah, exactly. It's not one tool to do it, but I think it's a critical piece of the process.
That it has to come before the board.
Yes.
Okay. Any other questions on the basic separation of duties we have listed here? Okay, I'll move on to some of the other questions. That's interesting. I thought this had points filled out on it. It doesn't appear that it's on the screen. So let me just go back up to the memo. Of these questions identified here, the memo talks about three other questions that we weren't able to put a yes answer to. And I'll go through them one by one here. Question 2D was 5 points. It asks if we have written policies in place for reporting fraud and abuse. And we do have written policies in place for many other items that it asked about. This one, we don't have specific action around how to report it. We look for it. You know, we speak to, you know, that we can't be of conflict, of things that might happen that could create some kind of abuse, but we don't have a good mechanism, at least listed in our policies, for reporting it. Of course, we have a board that our employees have access to, or supervisors they could talk to, or the general manager, but we don't spell it out. So I think we could easily put some additional policies in place in our personnel policies. In section 12 specifically, we talked about a productive work environment. I think here we could also add language that specifically addresses what to do if you need to report fraud and abuse that you see in the organization. You know, what actions would be considered inappropriate behavior, the reporting structure, guidance on types of things that employees should be looking for. It would also talk about whistleblower protection for that employee, should they say something and there wouldn't be any repercussions, and then having kind of that evaluation and investigation into the possible consequences for any kind of inappropriate behavior. So we thought we could work with the Summit County Legal Department, with Dave Thomas and his staff, to get some of those, some of that language put into our policies in the beginning of next year. The other thing that goes along with that is a fraud hotline. We don't have a fraud hotline currently in place. We do have a discrimination and harassment hotline that we've put in place and has been in for some time. And that hotline goes directly to Summit County. I believe that right now it goes to the Brian Bellamy directly. We could also set something up like this very easy. Have a, you know, a phone number that could go directly to a Summit County staff, someone outside of the Mountain Regional Organization or department. Are there any thoughts on that, or does that sound like something the board would be interested in implementing and staff moving forward on?
I think we should absolutely implement both of those.
Okay.
And Lisa, that form was filled out in the packet. I'm not sure what happened with the version pulled up.
Was it? Okay, good. Because I thought it was filled out in the packet. I pulled this up from the packet, but it's, for some reason, it's displaying on my computer. That's weird.
Yeah, I just pulled it up again because I thought the same thing. I was like, I swear that was filled out when I looked at it. So
I think the nature of the fraud issue here is that you've only got really 3 people within your organization that would be wrapped up in fraud. Right?
Yeah.
It's, let's just say that anybody up above that has an issue with someone conducting fraud down below them, that's a no-brainer, right? The issue is going upstream. And when you're accusing uphill, it's kind of hard to go uphill when you don't have very many people uphill from you, from who's signing the checks and stuff. So you kind of have to have a mechanism to report. Mm-hmm. Some sort of anonymity, whistleblower stuff that's in place, just because of the nature of who you're going to be reporting on, right?
Yeah, we're a small organization, so these kinds of assessments are difficult because You know, we only have 25 employees, and like you said, it's a very small number that are at the top and very small number of supervisors to report to or outside departments. That's where we can rely on the county to get that larger scale and broader scale of, you know, people feeling comfortable and being anonymous in their reporting.
Right.
So another one, like we talked about, we're a small entity. The cost for us to have an internal audit function or even a, we know one dedicated person doesn't, really make sense because we're so small and, you know, we can't really justify it. So, there were some options that the fraud, the risk assessment, document spoke to. One of those being contracting with an outside professional, you know, a few days a year. This would be outside of our current external auditor who does our annual financial statement audits, but potentially having them come in and just do some review of our current internal controls and providing any additional recommendations, kind of testing the ones we have in place to see if they're working. They also suggested potentially coordinating with a peer entity. The sewer district comes to mind. We both have really small, financial teams. And so, asking, a staff member of one of those entities to be up on all the auditing standards might not be, something that we could really see as feasible. So, for this reason, I think, you know, if the board was interested, we could definitely pursue, getting some kind of, some consulting or, you know, looking for an independent audit firm to come in and do some of this internal, control review.
Is it worth talking to? Is it Wells Fargo that does our audit or is it somebody else?
No, it's, their name's escaping me right now.
If they could take on an additional scope within their audit and if they have any experience in doing audit for fraud detection or prevention or something.
Yeah, I could talk to Dana about it. They do their own review of our internal audit, our internal auditing systems. It's different as their audit program every year changes. They don't go through the full assessment every time. They went through one when we first came on with them, and then they'll test it every year, different components. But I could talk to her about either, you know, someone else in her firm outside of who performs the audit, potentially helping us with that, or, you know, even if she knew somebody else that might be able to provide that service. The other one that we couldn't answer no to is a formal audit committee. I also think this is one that we could easily create. We have a formal finance committee, which is the entire board is made up, is the finance committee. And, basically the duties on that committee are to review budgets and review the annual audit. But what we could do is, like we do with our conservation committee or our personnel committee, just designate two individuals, to create this formal audit committee. And then we would need to assign that group, some kind of objectives and what to do. It would obviously need to include a financial expert. But it could help us with, when we get that, entity, if we wanted to come in and do some review of our internal controls for fraud assessment, they would help with that function. They could also help just with our, you know, reviewing in more detail our annual audit, rather than just relying on the whole board to do it, but actually having a dedicated team that would look at it a little bit more closely. Also, I think if the board's interested, that's another area we could pretty easily some additional layers of control.
Yeah. I somehow thought we already had that, which is why I usually got the first look at the audit before it went to the rest of the board.
Yeah, and we do kind of use the financial experts that we have on the board to look at that review, Karen. But we don't have it designated as a separate committee. It just says it's made up of the members of the board. So we call it a finance committee versus an audit committee. So like I said, we could leave it the way it is and maybe call out a financial person being the chair of that board if you still want to continue to have the finance committee be the entire membership of the board, or if you wanted to take it to a smaller level like our personnel or conservation committee and have it just be two individuals that then bring the information to the full board.
Do you have the finance committee take on these duties of the audit committee?
We could call it an audit committee, yeah. More in our bylaws.
When we do the training, the board training, there's mm-hmm. a section in there that talks about the whole check writing process and the checks and balances and all that stuff. I mean, aren't we really just verifying that we actually have someone in these positions doing what we're mandated to do anyway?
I guess, you know, we have in our bylaws, we have a finance function. We don't have, you know, this is just going a step further. This isn't anything that, like I said, this isn't anything that need, these aren't requirements. These are simply recommendations. So we don't have to make it that formal. And they're not asking us to make it that formal or as formal as being, you know, an internal audit committee or, you know, having interview of your internal controls. These are just best practices.
So I think, Lisa, you've identified the areas that we could improve upon to work towards that perfect score or work into that very low risk category, correct?
Yeah.
So these are, you know, items for discussion. Lisa, is there one or more of these recommendations that you think are a priority? What are the most important recommendations in this list in your eyes?
Yep, in the memo I identified, I think the fraud reporting and abuse, having that structure in there is important, and having the fraud hotline are the two things that I would take away from, and that would give you the 25 points that would get up into that low, very low risk category. So those would be the two things I would recommend.
Okay, thanks, Lisa. Any further questions or comments from the board or areas that they'd like us to dig into as far as implementation out of these other recommendations?
I just want to mention that I really like that we have, you know, Steve and Lisa in two different leadership roles that, you know, both have a really strong understanding of accounting that, you know, I feel like that makes the whole organization stronger. And I think that's, I don't know, I think that that's a good, this is why it's so good for the organization, because you do need people who understand internal controls and can see when something's going wrong.
Yeah, and I think it's they speak to it in the risk assessment, but having a CPA on staff is important. I'm no longer sitting in a finance role, but overseeing the finance team, I have that CPA, and Steve has an MBA. So for the size of the organization, we have pretty strong management at the top, which I think is good, and why we were able to score as high as we did for being such a small organization.
So, Mike, I'd recommend if there's no further questions or recommendations from the board, Lisa can lead the team in considering the implementation of those two priority areas that she talked about.
Mods to the policy and the hotline.
Correct.
I think that sounds good.
Okay. We'll work on that in the first quarter of 2021.
Okay.
Okay.
Great work, Lisa.
Thanks.
Item 8. We're looking at our calendar for 21.
Chris, could you bring up that document? Yeah, that'd be great. So we've had a little bit of a conflict. That's why I believe we don't have Dave here tonight. Snyderville Basin Rec District has their meetings on the second Thursday. I think they moved that maybe a couple of years ago, and it was going to be okay because Blaine was kind of stepping in, and we were going to have two attorneys. With his departure, it's been a stretch for Dave to be able to make both meetings. So Melissa asked if we had flexibility in our schedule, and I think for the district, we are all able to shift to the third Thursday. So we've presented a calendar with a third Thursday for 2021, if that works for the board. There are a couple dates that I've proposed here. It's just due to school calendars. Thursday, February 18th is in the middle of winter break or president's break. And then Thursday, November 18th, I think that also falls on the same. Basin Rec had to move one of their days, but I think we can work around those dates, but still stick to that third Thursday if that works for the board.
I kind of like it because then it gives Steve a little more time to get the financials done too.
Yep, that's one of the reasons I like the third Thursday the most. Is it? As you can see with this month, the close was just too tight to try to get information a second Thursday. So the third Thursday works best for having the most recent finance and up-to-date finance information to you rather than having it a little stale.
Steve, it'll give you 7 more days to figure out what picture to put in your report.
I know. I got to add that somewhere. We gave Sam a lot of crap for one of his pictures, though, so it kind of made me a little gun shy.
What does the board think? You okay with these dates?
Yeah, we're okay with.
They're as good as any. Okay.
Well, yeah, I don't see any. I think that's plenty of lead time for me.
And we can, you know, these aren't set in stone. This is something we need to publish in the park record just to get, and the Utah Public Notice website to get the dates out there. And if we have conflicts, we can change as we go along, but at least we can get this set of dates established, and it also helps Dave Thomas out, so we can get him back at our meetings.
So, Ian, we didn't pick up that audio, so if there's something you need to share, try again.
Yeah, sorry, my internet's unstable. I'm good with the dates, especially this year, because we probably won't be anywhere for winter break.
Okay, Mike, we will need a motion to approve the 2021 meeting schedule.
Wait, can I just say that I like Lisa, I would vote for February 25th to not be during President's Week.
Yep, I can move that date.
Okay.
The alternate.
And then what's the recommendation on the November alternate? We can either, at least if I remember correctly, we can either hold it on the 18th. We'll have a conflict with Basin Rec, so it's unlikely that we'll have Dave at that meeting, or we could do it on Tuesday the 16th.
Yep, we could. It's pretty far away. We could probably just leave it where it is. You know, Tuesday's a little bit unusual. The reason I couldn't do it before, after, I think Veterans Day is the week before, and the week after is Thanksgiving. Yeah. So
I agree with you. I'd be in favor to keep it on Thursday the 18th, and if there's a glaring issue that we need to move it as we get closer, we address it at that time.
Okay.
Why would we want to move it to the 16th?
It's up to you, Mike. We can establish the 16th now, or we can leave it as the 18th, and if we feel as though that the conflict with Basin Rec is an issue, then we can adjust at that time.
So they're on the... Do they switch in November? Oh, because of Veterans Day, they were on the 2nd. So they moved to the 18th.
Yeah, so they moved... Yeah, they moved on to our date.
They're stealing all our dates.
Okay, I got it. Thank you. Yeah, I'd say leave it on the 18th. Okay, we have a motion to approve the annual scheduled meetings for 2021 as revised.
I move to approve the schedule.
Okay, that would be Karen,
second,
and Tim. All those in favor? Aye.
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 So that was a motion by Karen, a second by Tim, and it was a unanimous vote for the recorder.
Okay, so item 9, the legal update by Dave, doesn't sound like we've got anybody here for that. So 10, questions on department updates. I think we should just go around the horn. Karen, would you like to go first? Do you have any?
Yeah, I don't have any questions on the department updates this week.
Tim, how are you looking there?
No questions by me.
About Ian.
Uh-oh. Scott, do you have any more insight on the Tom Ward discussion with Sandy City? I didn't understand the extraterritorial water contract.
Yeah, so I reached out. I was looking for somebody to reach out to down in the valley. Yeah, one of the larger systems that has water delivery contracts outside of either their municipal or district boundary to pick their brain just about the types of things that are included in those contracts and the approach to them in the context of the Pine Meadows request that we have on the table. As you can recall from the last meeting, the Pine Meadows water system is looking for a perpetual source delivery contract with Mountain Regional. And so I wanted to just pick his brain on, again, the typical things that would be considered or included and the structure of those contracts.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you. And then I had a question for Anna. The 4 large and 4 critical leaks, are those consistent leaks? It seems like we always have just a couple in those categories.
No, they're not usually consistent. They usually clear them up after a little while.
Okay. And are those, who falls into that category of a critical leak? Like, what's an example of one, I guess?
I think the critical leak is the amount of gallons, so it's usually more than, say, like 100 gallons an hour. Those are usually like an irrigation leak, like somebody didn't all the way winterize their irrigation and something froze and broke loose.
Okay, so it could be a residential. I was guessing it would be industrial, but so it could even be a residential client.
Yeah, most all of those are always a residential customer. I'm not aware of any commercial ones that have large leaks. Those are usually small.
That's really helpful. Cool, thank you.
You're welcome.
And then I'm just going to reiterate what Scott said earlier. I thought that maintenance summary that Brian had in there, man, that's a gold star. I mean, that reads as such a huge amount of work. So kudos to Brian and the whole crew. That's really an accomplishment for 2020. So thanks, guys. And then I had a question for Sam. The groundwater resources sampling equipment that was purchased, are those handheld, like, water quality meters or inline meters, or what did you guys pick up?
Yeah, it's all handheld. We haven't moved to any sort of permanent inline, online analyzers yet, but we have started looking at a few. But They're quite expensive.
So mainly just like pH conductivity.
Yeah, you know, we've been using TDS as our main indicator really for groundwater health. TDS and then looking at water levels in the groundwater sources. But the devices also do conductivity, pH, and oxidation reduction potential would be the four things.
Right on. Okay, thank you. And then sure. Last question was for Chris. The Colony 5 warranty period, I was wondering how long that warranty period is and what our due diligence is during that period. Do we go up and audit and check certain things? Yeah, what's encompassed in that?
Actually, Brian could probably speak better to that, but I think typically it's a year is the typical warranty period. There's a whole punch list that's kind of gone through. There, you know, if the valves aren't brought up to grade when they're finishing the asphalt, I mean, there's, you know, all the infrastructure stuff as well as the nitpicky stuff that I'm going through inside of the boosters and so forth. That all has to be all wrapped up and done before the warranty period starts, before we issue the letter.
Okay.
Brian,
go ahead.
Yeah.
Do you want to elaborate?
Yeah, that is correct. We gave them a big punch list, and they're just about done. But once that is all done, we do issue the warranty letter, and it's good for a year. After a year, we go back and do a walkthrough and make sure there's no problems, and then we turn around and own it.
Right on. I was just asking about that one because I thought in one of the previous meetings there was a write-up that there was some concern about some of their systems weren't meeting our desired level of service.
It was one of my comments, just struggling with contractors trying to get a product that we want, right? And that was trying to insert ourselves into the process earlier on in the developer world, right? Not stuff that we're building, but stuff that the developers build.
Yeah. Cool. Well, thank you. That was really helpful. That's it for me, Scott.
Okay, Mike, who's next? Maybe Karen?
I think Mike's the only one left.
I didn't have any questions.
Okay, so just Mike, any further questions from you, Mike, on the department updates?
It was really well covered.
Alrighty, I do have just a couple little things.
Well, it's 7:32 and we'll stand adjourned.
Hey, Mike, hang on one sec. A couple little things that cropped up I just want to bring up before we adjourn. One is in Bob's absence, and at this point, you know, Bob's term will be expiring. So does the board want to consider an interim vice chair? I'm working on one of our leadership meetings with council the first part of the year. If you don't want to have a formal interim vice chair, is there somebody who may want to attend that meeting with Mike, if their schedule permits?
I wouldn't mind attending.
Okay. So Ian.
And if Ian can't do it, I will, so.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Karen.
I have one thing after you're done, Scott.
Okay. I just want to thank the board for their attendance this year. It's been a really disruptive year for everybody, and I feel like the attendance was, if it wasn't perfect, it was really darn close. So thank you for your service and for your time. And I was just going to close with happy holidays, and I'll turn it over to Chris.
Yeah, just one last little thing. I noticed that Ian signed up today for our push emails. And I don't recall if any of the other board members are signed up for this, but that might be something that you guys might want to sign up for, just on our website on the forums, and it allows you to get notified if there's outages, or you get just push emails, right? And it's not intrusive. We don't do it all the time. It's just when there's district interruptions it's one of our notification methods, right? So if we have a leak, Anna can push something out. If we have rate hearing stuff, that all gets pushed out on public notice there. So if you guys haven't signed up for it, I would recommend you guys do.
Great. We just go on the website?
Correct. Yep. It's under notices on the far upper right side.
Ian, you live in Summit Park, right?
I do live in Summit Park, and it's an
I can understand that. Okay.
Yeah, and to make it even more funny, so yeah, there was a major break on our street last night, and
kidding.
Yeah, and I had water coming out of my.
Glad we're not hearing that.
Yeah, we lost your audio again, Ian. All right, Mike. I think we can stand adjourned whenever you're ready. I'm all through. If there's no further comment.
Yeah. Well, thanks everyone, the staff. It was a tough year. I think we did really well.
Yep. So agreed. Thanks, Mike.
All right.
Thank you. Stay safe.
Thank you.
7:35, and we're adjourned.
Okay. Yeah. Bye.